Blog Talk Radio.
Hollywood come through my neighborhood with cameras on. I really think they're stealing from us like a sample song. I really wish one day we'd take it back like Hammer's home. The hurricane come and took my Louisiana home, and all I got in return was a darn country song. This old country wrong. Oh, but you're right if you just put a little ice on and cut your mic on, but you don't even write songs. But Hollywood make you fit like a python. I make cobra, I'm so not sober. I'm high like a Hollywood coffee or soda. You can call me a roller. Hold up, your grill's glistening. Spent $100,000 on mine to feel different. What's the real sense of it? Bling bling, I know. And did you know I'm the creator of the term? I just straightened the perm. They let it sit too long, they just making it burn. Make a movie of our lifestyle, but they earn like a dead body burned on the mantelpiece. That's why I try not to lie and wax like it's candle grease. And I beast a little nigga cooler than antifreeze. Deep frost on your window pane, Lil Wayne, but in Hollywood it's little rain. Don't make me numb, so that's why I got a prenum. I do.
Starts off like a small town marriage. Lovely wife and life, baby carriage. Now all the stars have cars, success of course, but it ends in Hollywood divorce. Hollywood divorce. Yeah,
yeah. A is for Adamville, B is for going home. See if I give a fuck if you like me, you know I don't. If she ain't got a good head on her, leave that hoe alone. If she do got some good head on her, let her sing a song. D is for what I serve, I don't be on no curb. She ain't no junkie neither, I ain't no dope dealer. But she keep coming back, three stacks, must be some crack. Put that pipe in her lap, she ain't know how to act. Now that I've got your undivided attention, I'm gonna say this and run, under condition one. Promise me you gon' stack, promise me you gon' ball. Promise me you'll invest, three-fourths of it all. But what? So your kids can have some cheese. Can get with it, get on your knees. Cause wealth is the word.
Yep.
Richest round the corner from the curb. Don't like what I write, shoot me a bird.
10th grade, the way was paid for me and Dre to create. Like Dr. Frankenstein, the arts and crafts. Now could we make a difference? Antoine Patton and Andre Benjamin been jamming for you crabbing. Rap niggas and journalists that's quick to misprint public and private business. Then retract back for deaf ears and think it's dismissed. Part 2, the sequel, all new cast. This ain't the same gang of nerds on the internet slandering your name behind that screen name. They're lame and their life is pretty plain. M&M's with no nuts won't show up face to face. Straight bitch made like puppies on the nipples of a mutt. Address it on a case by case basis like the judge. What about the lying asshole trying to plot, or these niggas on the block who want the queen?
Nigga, please.
But even she can walk, we'll miss her. We ain't gon' fake it, but God don't make mistakes. Must be something bigger waiting.
Starts off like a small town lovely wife and life, baby carriage. Now all the stars have cars, success of course, but it ends in Hollywood divorce. Hollywood divorce.
I do love you, but you hate me at the same time. Lights, camera, action, it's game time. Do you take this here as your lovely wife? To love her and cherish her for all your life? I solemnly swear to dare share and take you there. And me and you together, baby, we a lucky pair. It's been a long time, we walk a thin line. Others say they got you, but you've been mine. As I sit back and watch all the cat fights, domestic violence, is that right? But you love a dog, gave me the spotlight. And now I'm going up, showing up, blowing up. I never ever thought that we were separated all. But you played me like a game of football. Used to feed me, need me, dress me. Now it's so messy, straight cut out and left me.
Hollywood divorce. All the fresh styles always start off as a good little hood thing. Look at blues, rock, jazz, rap. Not even talking about music, everything else too. By the time it reach Hollywood, it's over. But it's cool. We just keep it going, make new shit.
Take our game, take our name. Give us a little fame, and then they kick us to the curb. That's a cold thing.
thing so beautiful.
Dada.
She just hit my heart, oh.
Dada.
Full force, and she got me like.
Dada.
I be like.
Dada.
Baby.
Dada.
Why you so fine?
Baby, you know. Enhance your mind. Recharge your spirit. Awaken your soul. Enhancing Awareness Radio. Enhancing awareness with clarity.
All right, guys. Greetings, greetings, greetings. I just heard something that I got to share with you guys, share with the world. But history, you know, we think of history as this program, you know what I mean? Use the domination. Well, for me, used for control and domination as well as controlling the narratives. But, you know, an epiphany had came that history is the conversation in which you have with your ancestors, Dr. James Small. You know what I mean? So that was a great perspective, you know, in looking at certain things. You know, when we start to shift our perspective and how we see things, things start to change, right? So royalties to everybody, guys. I think that this is a very important podcast today. It's what I call spirituality 101, you know what I mean? But changing your thoughts and changing your life. In my line of work, you know, I see a lot of people, and their root is their thinking. So myself included, you know, early on in my journey, you know what I mean, I had came to the knowing that perception, you know what I'm saying, perception was very key and very important. And if we can start to shift things in our thinking, maybe then our thinking will start to shift. You know what I mean? So I hope you guys enjoyed this one. I may or may not be back. Eternal, I don't believe, is kind of coming in today. But there was no podcast yesterday. So, guys, yeah, this one is like a basic, again, spirituality 101. But it's about changing your thoughts, changing your life, guys. So let's go ahead and listen to Wayne Dyer, Rest in Power, Wayne Dyer. I do a thing early a.m., and that's thank you, thank you, thank you. You know what I'm saying? Because he actually taught me one of his videos about how when we set the intention and give thanks, you know what I'm saying, for whatever, even for me, I like to give thanks for the bad. I used to always say there is beauty in the chaos. And I trained my mind for years. How can I begin to find the beauty in the chaos? You know what I mean? And that is when I started to, we can't really rig negativity, guys, because there's dangers, because it's a part of life. You know, so instead of living in a society, Patty, you know, happy Patty, you know what I'm saying? Like living in this happy Patty, no negative, you know, no, that is dangerous, guys, because negativity is a part of life. How are you dealing? How are you reacting to negativity? How are you reacting to toxic behaviors, you see? Because life is only 10% of what happens, yet 90% in how you react to it, all right? So let's go ahead and listen to Wayne Dyer. This is an hour and 30-minute lecture, and I'll be back to close out, guys.
What we have to do, it's now 10 years we've been creating public television program. It's been a wonderful, wonderful journey. I obviously support public television. It's a way to bring higher consciousness to our entire country, and I'm proud and pleased to be here. This is the program about changing your life. Not in the traditional way that we think of when we think about changing our lives. Usually that means changing your behaviors, retraining yourself, getting new habits, going out and trying them out and changing your life. This is about changing your thoughts, and then your life will change. Change your thoughts, change your life. It's the name of this program. It's the name of the book. It is something that I very, very strongly endorse, that we have within us the ability and the capacity through the way that we use our minds and the way that we process things and events to make our lives totally shift and change around. And I can tell you that it doesn't make any difference what age you are, whether you're a teenager watching this or whether you're someone in your 60s, 70s, 80s, or anywhere along the way, you can make that change. And I'll tell you, it happened for me. 2 years ago, on the 10th of May, I turned 65. And the next day, on the 11th of May, I had a life-changing thing take place for me. I changed the way that I was thinking about who I am, about what kind of a man I am, about what kind of a person I intend to be for the rest of my life and where I'm going. And something began to resonate with me that I had to make a shift and make a change. At the age of 65, I had a wonderful office, which was really a townhouse. It was filled with over 20,000 books. It was filled with clothing. It was filled with records of all kinds. It had pictures on the wall. I had awards that I had received over the years, and everything that I had accumulated, literally, in this physical world, had accumulated in that office. I turned the key and handed it to my manager, Maya, who's been with me for almost 30 years, and I said, I would like you to sell everything or distribute everything that's in there. Sell the townhouse, get rid of it, take all the records, all the books. I got rid of my shoes. And I left it all behind and turned it over to her to get rid of everything. I detached myself from a lifetime of accumulation. And I moved full-time to a place over in the middle of the Pacific Ocean on one of our great islands called Maui. And in the next months, I began to get a lot of things coming to me about what my life was to what was to unfold, things that I wasn't even expecting. And I think about this idea about what age you are and whether or not changes and shifts can be made and how difficult so many people attribute this to. They say, it's just, that's an impossibility. I couldn't possibly do that. I'm so attached to all of these things. Or I'm too old. I've been living in the same place too long, whatever it might be. Right here in this audience is one of the women that I revere, I think more than any other woman I can think of in the professional world. At the age of 60, she changed her thoughts, and her life changed dramatically. She started a publishing company called Hay House, which is one of the world's largest publishers of spiritual and higher consciousness material. She wrote a book called You Can Heal Your Life. She's here today. Her name is Louise. Hey, Louise, would you stand up? Louise, with a great number of people from all over the world, just celebrated her 80th birthday. So, I should look so good even at 60, and I'm just so deeply honored that you're here, too. Thank you. What happened for me in the next few months was absolutely life-changing. I had a friend tell me who was severely addicted to all kinds of drugs and alcohol, who was basically very close to death. He refused all kinds of treatment. He wouldn't go through the programs and so on, but he read a book. And the book was called The Tao Te Ching, The Tao Te Ching, T-A-O-T-E-C-H-I-N-G, Tao Te Ching. Tao in ancient Chinese means the way, the great way. T-E is the term that means the application of or the virtue of. And Ching in ancient Chinese means book. So it's the book for applying the virtue of living the way. That's what this book means. And he told me that, and I thought, I've heard of the Tao Te Ching. I've heard of Taoism. I'm familiar with that. I had read about it when I was in college. I'd even lectured a little bit about it when I was teaching at a university in New York City, at St. John's University. It was something that I had sort of a cursory awareness of, but it wasn't something that I was really profoundly interested in. I was watching a TV show one night, and someone talked about the Tao on there. I walk into a bookstore, and there's a copy of the Tao. This is all happening in the 6 months or so that between when I had left, and knowing that it was time for me to detach myself from all of the things that had been so much a part of my life and move on into a new area of my life. So I couldn't resist it any longer, and I said, I really want to read the Tao, and I'm going to take the next year, a full year. And in that year, what I would like to do is I would like to read each verse. There are 81 verses in the Tao Te Ching. You can read it in an afternoon, but you can study it for a lifetime. And in the studying of this, I said I would like to just take those 365 days for the next year, and in every 4 days, I'm going to read one verse. Some of them are only 4 lines long. Some of them are 12, 16 lines long. I'm going to create for myself a way of seeing if I can live this Tao. And what I did was I would read it, and I would meditate on it. I would walk on it. I would go swim on it. When I would do yoga, I would practice it, and then I would sit down after the fourth day. And I had a picture of the man who was considered to be the author of this, although there's no historical actual record. His name is Lao Tzu. This is the visage that I looked at. This is the image of an artist's drawing of Lao Tzu. In ancient Chinese means old man. Old man. He was the old man who was living in China in the time of the warring states, and he decided he didn't want any more to do with war and violence and hatred and killing and all of the things that were so much a part of his world. And he got on his oxen and he left, and before he left to go off and be by himself, he dictated some 5,000 Chinese characters these 81 verses that became the Tao Te Ching. There are some people who call the Tao Te Ching the wisest book ever written. If you Google this thing called the Tao Te Ching, you'll come up with over 1,300,000 hits on the Tao Te Ching. Not only that, there are 14,000 translations of the Tao Te Ching that I have come across. So what I did is I took 10 of those translations, the ones that seem to be the most relevant, the ones that seem to have the most meaning to those people who lived in this part of the Western world, and I combined them into what I consider to be the most useful translation of the Tao Te Ching. And each morning I would get up and I would look at this picture and I would ask, what is it that you would say to the people who are living now at this time, given the conditions that we have in our life right here? What is it that you would do? Many people call this a manual for achieving a way of life that literally guarantees integrity, joy, peace, and balance in our life. Now, there was a man who was a contemporary of Lao Tzu. His name was Confucius. He was many years younger than Lao Tzu, but he kept hearing about this old man who had all of this great wisdom. And one day, he decided that he was going to go, legend says, and visit Lao Tzu. And he spent a full day listening to this man, because Confucius was someone in China who was trying to lay down all the rules of etiquette and how to conduct yourself and trying to dictate to the people what they should be. Lao Tzu had nothing to do with any of that. And when he went to see Lao Tzu, he came back and he talked to all of his people. And this is what he said. He said, of birds, I know they have wings to fly with. Of fish, that they have fins to swim with. Of wild beasts, that they have feet to run with. For feet, there are traps. For fins, there are nets. For wings, arrows. But who knows how dragons surmount wind and cloud into heaven? This day, I have seen Lao Tzu, and he is a dragon. And there he is, a dragon. And a dragon in ancient Chinese was a picture of someone or something that was so mysterious and so difficult to comprehend, because it could always be something else. There was a great teacher who came many years after that. His name was Rumi, who was Jalaluddin Rumi, who was a great poet, a Persian poet in the 14th century. And he had a line. He said, the day that you were born, a ladder was set up to help you to escape from this world. I believe the Tao Te Ching and this thing that I have done, this change your thoughts, change your life effort that I spent one full year on every single day doing exactly what I just said, is a ladder that will help you to return. In the Tao, there's a very famous line. The 40th verse of the Tao says, returning is the motion of the Tao. Returning is the motion of the Tao. So that all of us came from a divine spiritual essence, invisible. Everything in the world of form emanated from something that is formless. There was a split second when you went from non-being to being. And what Lao Tzu was trying to teach was to be able to return to that place from which you came and live your life from the spiritual perspective and become a God-realized being. Another great poet, T.S. Eliot, once said, "We shall not cease from exploration. And at the end of all of our exploring will be to arrive where we started and to know the place for the first time, for the first time." What I'm asking you to do and what Lao Tzu seemed to be saying was learn to die while you're alive, because you will ultimately return. All of us have a return trip, a round trip ticket when we came in, didn't we? But if you could learn to die while you're alive, and there's a great story. I have to tell you this story. I want to read this story to you. It's a way to look at this idea of dying while you're alive. It goes like this. To die while we are alive gives us the only opportunity we will ever have to get outside of this package that houses us temporarily. There's an ancient parable that repeated generation after generation by the spiritual masters of India, which illustrates this point. Listen to this wonderful story. A traveler from India went to Africa to acquire some local products and animals. And while in the jungle, he saw thousands of beautiful, multicolored talking parrots. He decided to capture a talking parrot and take it back as his pet. At home, he kept his parrot in a cage, and he fed him, and he gave him wonderful seeds and honey and played music for his pet, and generally he treated him very well. When it was time for the man to return to Africa 2 years later, he asked his parrot if there was any message that he could deliver to the parrot's friends who were back in the jungle. Well, the parrot told his master to say that he was very happy in his cage and that he was enjoying each day and to convey his love. Well, when the traveler arrived back in Africa, he delivered the message to the parrot back in the jungle. Just as he finished his story, a parrot with tears welling up in his eyes fell over dead. The man was alarmed, and he decided that the parrot must have been very close to the parrot in the cage and that this was probably the reason for the sadness and for his demise. When the traveler returned to India, he told his pet what had happened. As he finished his story, the pet parrot's eyes welled up with tears, and he kneeled over dead in his cage. The man was astounded, but he figured that his pet died from the despair of hearing of the death of his close friend back in the jungle. The trader opened up the cage and tossed the dead bird outside onto the trash heap. Immediately, the pet parrot flew up to a branch on the tree outside. The trader said to him, "So you're not dead after all. Why did you do that? You tricked me." And the parrot responded, "Because that bird back in Africa sent me a very important message." "What was the message?" the trader wanted to know. "He told me that if you want to escape from your cage, you must die while you're alive." We must indeed die while we are alive, in order to be able to look back at our waking consciousness and see ourselves trapped in our cage, which in our case is our body.
Look at that, guys. We must die, okay? So, like, we must die to our old ways of thinking. You know what I mean? That's good.
Then we will see how unnecessary it is to remain caged. Isn't that a great story? I love that story. Yeah, you can applaud. what I encourage you to do is to create for yourself a sacred space. And in this sacred space, I'd like you to place everything that has energy value to you. Photograph. I have this photograph that I looked at every day for 1 year and began to talk to after a while. It's a little weird, but you begin to get this idea. And those of you who wonder why I am no shoes, I'd like you to know that where I live, you never walk into a sacred space with your shoes on. It would be considered dishonorable to do so. And to me, this stage, this setting, this beautiful place, and this beautiful symbol is a sacred, sacred space. I live without shoes. I heard it said once that if you wear shoes everywhere you go, the whole earth will feel like leather. And it's nice to feel what the earth feels like and to feel that naturalness. So in that sacred space, you will feel the energy of the photographs, of any mementos that you have, of pictures of your children, of drawings, of statues, of anything at all that you can think of. I have a beautiful sacred space, and it calls me. And as it calls me, when I go into that place that is so profoundly sacred to me, the most beautiful things begin to happen for me, particularly in the middle of the night when no one else is up, and I feel closest to God, and I feel closest to this beautiful old man. So many important messages to me through his Tao Te Ching and in my meditations to help me to create this program, change your thoughts, change your life, living the wisdom of the Tao. What I would like to do now is to look at some of the key thoughts that I would like you to think about and consider changing as you become a person who becomes more God-realized, that is, someone who has died but stayed alive and returned and went back on that return trip. The first of these thoughts to change is to change the idea that I can't trust in my own nature to I trust in my own nature. Did it ever occur to you that you have a nature, that nature is so profound and is always calling you? You know it. No one else can know it. No one else can impose it on you. No one else can tell you what it is that you feel in here that you know is why you're here and what you're doing here. There's no one else can explain that or explore that with you. You can't share it. Everything in the universe has a nature. Your dog has a nature. A crocodile has a nature. A duck has a nature. A crow has a nature. Everything has its nature. Everything has a dharma, including you. But what we've learned and we've grown up to believe is that I can't trust in that nature. My nature, to trust in your nature, to know that you came from a divine place of well-being and to trust in it. Listen to this. Verse 38 of the Tao, a few lines. The great master follows his own nature and not the trappings of life. A truly good man is not aware of his goodness and is therefore good. Think about yourself. The first moment of life, the very first moment, that speck when you went from nowhere, N-O-W-H-E-R-E, to now here, N-O-W-H-E-R-E, from nowhere to now here. Same thing. Just a little question of spacing, just a little different spacing, all right? So you went from nowhere, now you're in now here, and where do you think you're going? Nowhere. Right? Back to nowhere. Who out there watching, who in this audience isn't going back to nowhere? That's where we're all headed, back to nowhere. So in that split second, then you lived inside your mother's womb for 9 months. And in that nine-month period of time, you trusted your nature. You didn't have a sonogram and say, my God, I don't have a nose. Very scary. What if it doesn't show up on time? Or you didn't do any of that. You trusted completely in your own nature, right? And so did your mother. There's very little that you can do because what you were to become, everything that this physical body needed, was all handled in there. And also, beyond what was needed for your physical world and what Lao Tzu called the world of the 10,000 things, the 10,000 things. There's 10 billion things, obviously, in the physical world, but that's what how he named it, the world of the 10,000 things. And in that world of the 10,000 things, everything returns back to its source. But while you're in that place, and why wouldn't you believe, even maybe for a second, that not only was my physiology all handled for me, but everything else that I needed, if I could just stop interfering with it and stop other people from doing it, that everything I needed, and that's a big part of understanding change your thoughts, change your life. It's a big part of that, the idea that I have a nature that I can trust, not something that I have to be afraid of, and I can stop letting other people interfere with it as well. So what happens? We go through those 9 months, totally uninterrupted. We have no questions. Everything works out. And then what? We say the very first thing, we pop out after 9 months, we'll take over from here. That was good work. Nice work, guys. Thank you very much. And so what we'll do is just sort of edge you out of here, you know. So we edge God out. We take on an ego, E-G-O. And we edge out and we say, we'll take over. And we have an ego. And this ego, what this ego does is it takes on a set of beliefs. And these beliefs are that I am what I have, that I am what I do, that I am what other people think of me. So we're raised to believe that the more stuff I accumulate, the more things that I get, this is who I am. The more that people like me, this is what I'll get. And on it goes. I want to tell you a story. The story of one of my children. Her name is Tracy. We lived in Detroit when she was born. She came in as a little rebellious. She came in the middle of the Detroit riot, when they said, nobody is allowed to go out. Anybody that goes out is going to be arrested. And she said, this would be a good time for me to show up. Which is exactly what she did. So when she showed up, after about the second or third year, Tracy went to preschool. And she came home from preschool. She was about three. And in that time, she came home and she said, she handed me a paper. And it had a gold star at the top of the paper. And I looked at it, and I said, and she said, Daddy, I got a gold star, I got a gold star. I said, I'm not really interested in gold stars. I said, but what are you doing? What is this? What? She said, well, we did something in school called adding, and I got them all right. And I can't believe, you're three. You can't learn to add when you're three. And I went through this whole long thing about adding and how terrific it was, and she kept saying, Daddy, the gold star, excuse me, but I was the only one in the class that got a gold star. I got them all right. I said, you know, Tracy, I said, honey, that said, some people just need to have gold stars, and teachers sort of like to give it out and make that the reason why you're doing something, I said, and set you apart from everybody else. I said, but your dad doesn't really care much about that and how you stack up with others, and they're going to be, I'm more interested in what you're learning. And she said, okay, she was used to that. She had a weird daddy, and she knew that. So about another month or so, she came home with a paper that had looked like it had had a gold star on it, but it had obviously been taken off. Her little thumbprints were all over. There was a place where there had been a gold star. It was taken off. And I said, what's this? Well, she said, we're now doing subtraction. And I said, subtraction? That's amazing. And I took over by her dresser. I said, you know that money you got in your piggy bank? I put it in my pocket. I said, that's called subtraction. Isn't that great? And she said, give me that money back. And we talked and talked about subtraction. Finally, I couldn't take it anymore. I said, honey, what happened? What was this? What was here at the paper? And she said, oh, she said that. She said, the teacher gave me one of those gold stars. I said, really? I said, well, what happened to it? Oh, she said, I took it off. I said, well, what'd you do with it? She said, I gave it back to her. I said, well, what did you tell her? She said, oh, I told her to give it to someone who needs that sort of thing.
Yeah. And there she is. She's standing right here. She's going to be 40 this year, my daughter Tracy.
So what we have to do is learn how to take this ego of ours, this part of us that believes that who we are is what we have and what we do and what other people think of us. But remember, if you grow up believing that you are what you do, then when you don't, you aren't. And if you believe that you are what you have, when it's gone, you aren't. And if you believe that you are what other people think of you, your reputation, which we raise people to believe, it's my, I have to be concerned with what other people think of me. Take this ego and retrain it. And one of the ways that you do to retrain it is, first, you take this idea that the ego has of fear. What are you afraid of? Anybody out there, what are you afraid of? Shift from fear to curiosity. Become curious about what you're afraid of. That's what Lao Tzu taught me. Become curious about what you're afraid of. You're afraid of flying? Get curious about that. Get interested in that. You're afraid of snakes. You're afraid of disapproval. You're afraid. Just shift from fear and say, I'm going to become more curious about what I'm afraid of. And then take all of the things that you're attached to, like all of your photographs, like all of your furniture, like all of your clothing, like all of the stuff that you find so much attachment to, and start letting it go. Start letting it go. You know, the day that I turned that key on May the 11th in 2006, I didn't even know where I was going. I just knew there was a shift taking place. I felt freer than I'd ever felt, I think, in my life. In my mid-60s, out there on a whole new adventure. And here we are talking about it on national television, on PBS. Take that idea that you have to be attached to things and know that you came in with nothing, with no thing. And you're going to leave with nothing, with no thing. And understand that your life is a parenthesis in eternity. Live there without attachment. And then take your need to be in control of yourself, of others, of the situation, and shift from control to trust. Begin to have a trust. Lao Tzu is profound about this. In each one of the 81 verses, it comes up about 60 times as you look at letting go and letting God, allowing yourself to trust in your nature, allowing yourself to no longer believe that everything has to be controlled by me, and that other people no longer have to be in control of me as well. Begin to trust, just like you did for the first 9 months. You trusted. Your nose showed up. Your height showed up. Your eyes showed up. Whatever. It all showed up. It's all perfect. It's all the. So why not wander through your life and have this wonderful, peaceful knowing that it's all fine? And finally, shift from your sense of entitlement. Nobody can treat me that way. I'm entitled to have this. Well, I paid for that. I let go. I mean, that in 1 year, I let go of all of my entitlements. I don't feel I'm entitled to anything. I'm just here. Shift from entitlement to radical humility. Lao Tzu speaks about it so often. Stay humble. Stay low. The greatest leaders are the ones who do the least. The ones who stay back and just model and allow. And at the end of the day, in one of the verses of the book, it says, the people will say, we did well. We did 49 of the Tao Te Ching. Here's an exact quote. The sage is kind to the kind and kind to the unkind because the nature of his being is kindness. And also, be wise and help all beings impartially, abandoning none. You know what I do? Just before I program, I have to admit I was nervous. I was humbled by it. Like, who are you, Wayne Dyer? Who are you to read the Tao and believe that you can interpret it on television and interpret it in a book and spend a year in like, I got real humble with that. And you know what I say? Tao, which is just another word for God or Source, or Krishna, or Allah, or whatever you want to call it, guide me. Guide me now. I have that awareness before I come out. If you knew, it says in the Course in Miracles, if you knew who walked beside you at all times on this path that you have chosen, you could never experience fear or doubt again. I remember Mother Teresa saying to a dear friend of mine, who was asking, what could he do? What could he do to do something for her? He was name was Pat McMahon. He was on KTR Radio in Phoenix. And finally, Mother Teresa said to him, "You can do something for me." She said, "Tomorrow morning, get up at 4 a.m. and go out onto the streets of Phoenix and find someone who's living there who believes that he's alone and convince him that he's not. That's what you can do. That's how saints talk. That's how Lao Tzu spoke." Okay, let's go on to the next thought, the change. So you're changing from not trusting in your nature to trusting in your nature. You change your thought from "I need more" to what I call living contentment. What is this thing about more? It's the mantra of the ego, isn't it? I have to have more. I have to collect more stuff. I have to have more friends. I have to have more money. It's more, 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 more. When where you came from nowhere. You don't need anything. It's a continuous bombardment that we are all exposed to in this whole world of believing that we have to have more. It's one of the reasons why I love public television so much. You don't see ads on PBS. You don't have to be constantly exposed to the idea that you have to have more and you have to get more, and if you don't have this, then you're not complete, and so on. So we get bombarded with this idea of attracting more. And Lao Tzu says, live contentment. Live in a state of being contented. Here's verse 81, the last verse of the Tao Te Ching, my favorite translation of it, and I put it right into the book. Sages do not accumulate anything, but give everything to others, having more, the more they give. It's a great lesson. My son, Sans, who's, we're very, very close. We just spent a couple of months together over in Maui, just being together, just being. It was a divine time. So he came home with, this last summer, he came home with four T-shirts that he loved. And I said, "Well, honey," I said, which one do you like the best?" He said, "Well, that one over there, that blue one, it's got the writing, it's got the drawing, and it's got a surfer." And I said, "That's great." I said, "I'd like to have that one." He said, no, Dad, that's my favorite. That's the one I like the best." I said, "I know." I said, "That's the one. Would you mind if I had that one?" He said, "I would mind a lot." He said, "If you can have one, I'm not so crazy about this one over here." I said, "So you're going to give me something you don't like?" You know, I said, that's the one. I love that. We have the same taste. Could I have that one? He said, "Dad, you're crazy." He said, "You can't have my favorite T-shirt." I said, "Well, I want you to think about that. I want you to think about detaching and letting go and not needing to have more." And he's heard me talk about this stuff his entire life. So finally, he just, you know, I went in and I tried it on. I said, "This thing looks so great." Looking in the mirror, he's looking. He said, that really is mine." I said, "Yeah." I said, "But you're going to give it to me." He said, no. I said, "Yeah, well, just think about it, you know, because I'm your dad, and I'd really like to have this." So he reluctantly parted with it. And so that evening, I was still wearing the shirt, and he looked at me, and he said, "That's my shirt." I said, "You know, Sans," I said, "you gave me the shirt." I said, "I'm going to wear this shirt until you are happy that I have your favorite shirt. I'm never going to take it off until you are happy." He said, "Well, you'll be wearing that shirt a long time." I said, "Well, that's okay." So I wore it the next day. I got up. I slept in it that night. I got up the next morning. I put it on, and that fans would come in, and he'd look at me like, "Oh, you're still not happy that you gave me something that you really love." Because this is what it really means to be a sage. This is what it means to be a divine being. To be someone who's willing to part with not the things they don't like, but what they do like. I wore it the next day. I wore it the next day. I wore it for 2 weeks. Take it off only to wash it. Put it right back on. 2 solid weeks. Each one of my children will tell you. Finally, one day he said, "Dad, I'm so happy. I am so thrilled that you have that T-shirt." I said, "Oh, that's great. I can finally take this thing off. I'm going to just give it away." But it's like, what a great lesson, the idea that you there's a rule, it's called the 80-20 rule. And in the 80-20 rule, it says everything that you have, all of your stuff, 20% of it is what you use. All of your clothes in your closet, 20%, you just keep using the same 20% over and over. 80% of the clothing that you have in your closet for so many people is something that you never use. You don't live. You look at it, you store it, you think, well, there might come a day. Oh, I can't part with that, even though you've been carting it around. Every time you move it and you put it. Take the 80% that you don't use, says Lao Tzu, and give it away. Give it away. Lao Tzu says that when your cup is full, pouring. When your cup is full, stop pouring. We have an obesity crisis in the United States, in the Western world. The obesity crisis can be handled if you just read the Tao. If you realize, in verse 33, it says, if you realize you have enough, you are truly rich. If you could just learn something called portion control, where you just take a bite and you say, is my cup full? Stop pouring. Stop pouring. In other words, instead of filling yourself with that which is already a surplus, and the Tao, it teaches us to take surpluses and to reduce them and to take deficiencies and increase them so that we create balance in our lives, to be in balance. You can take the jewelry that you don't use. You can take the clothing. And then once you've given away the 80% that you don't use, take one of the things that you really like and practice giving that away. It's such a wonderful way. Listen to this poem. It was written by a great Persian poet named Hafiz. Even after all this time, the sun never says to the earth, you owe me. Just look what happens with a love like that. It lights up the whole sky. It lights up the whole sky. There's no owing. There's no owing. You don't have to be. You can practice living in a state of contentment. This was so powerful for me. You just can't imagine how good it felt for one entire year to walk through every day and say, I'm content. I'm content. I start out every morning of my life. The first words, Hafiz says, if there's only one prayer that you say every day, make it thank you. Just say thank you. That's how I start. Wake up. Thank you, God. Thank you. Thank you, Source. Thank you, Tao. Whatever you want to call. The opening line of the Tao says, the Tao that can be named is not the Tao. As soon as you put a name on it, it dissolves. There's no name for it. It's just endlessly, invisibly, constantly in a state of creating, out of a state of love. The next thought that the Tao teaches us to change. Change your thoughts. Change your life. You really do. See, so much of the previous PBS specials that I've done on inspiration and intention, these were teaching people generically how to think differently. What Lao Tzu taught me was what to specifically think in place of thinking back. Instead of thinking that I don't trust my nature, he said, trust your nature. Instead of saying, I need more, he said, you need less. More is less. That comes right out of the Tao. Next thought, move from thinking in a rigid way to thinking and being flexible, soft, and allowing. From rigidity to softness. What a wonderful transformation that is. I was standing looking at, with my son, Sam, and we were on Maui, and we were looking at water. As water was going against some rocks and some cliffs and so on. And in these pictures, in this moment, I said to my son, I said, which do you think is stronger, the water or the cliff? The water or the rocks? Which one do you think is more powerful and stronger? And he said, well, he said, the rocks, obviously, they're stronger and they're bigger and all. I said, but I said, water is very, very patient, isn't it? How much chance do those rocks have if they want to survive? I mean, what chance do they have? That was, and Lao Tzu is speaking to us about understanding our nature by examining how nature works and then making it apply to our thought so that a soft thought, a thought that isn't a rigid thought, a thought that doesn't say you have to be this way or you have to be that way, a thought that is not stiff, a thought that water, There are so many references to water and what we can learn from water. You're 75% water. The planet is 75% water. We are water. The rest of us is just muscled water. It's just, it's all water. And water is soft. Water can enter anywhere. You get into a conflict with somebody else, and you picture yourself as water. You can enter with water in any place that there's an opening. If you can visualize yourself as a being who moves into the space of water, if you can see yourself that way, you can just enter into those places and the people that you love and your children and your spouse and anyone at all and enter there softly. Here's verse 8. The supreme good is water, which nourishes all things without trying to. And verse 78, right smack out of the Tao. Nothing in the world is softer and weaker than water. But for attacking the hard, the unyielding, nothing can surpass it. There is nothing like it. Here it is. I asked when they designed this set, this beautiful set, and thank you, designer, for this. I asked if I could have water on the stage. They did it. They figured it out. There's a Now, I'm going to try to get some of this water, okay? So you get down here and you just, I'm going to scoop this up. And okay, now tighter you hold it, the less chance you have of doing anything with it, isn't it? How can I experience water? The way to experience water is to just get soft, just get unbending. And there it is. That's what water is. The minute I grasp, the minute I try, and Lao Tzu is saying, the same thing is true in everything in your life. The more you grasp, the more you try to hold on to it, the more you try to be rigid with it, the less control you have of it. The softer you are, the less rigid you are, the more flexible you are as a person, the more you can accomplish. And this is a great way to practice in parenting as well. And this idea that a rigid thought, how many times have you heard this idea that if I tell you something, I'm going to stay consistent with it. We have a set of rules. These are the rules, and we'll do it this way. In the Tao, it says the more rules you make, the more rule breakers you create. It's true. The more rules you have in your house about how everything has to go. We had in our house, my wife would have a big jar of M&Ms, peanuts, you know, different, all these different multicolored ones. And the kids in our house, because we didn't feed them sugar and we didn't give them sodas and stuff like that, so they, you know, they were just more like a decoration. Every once in a while, someone would take them, and they'd hardly ever be replaced. Now, when we had kids come over to our house who weren't ever allowed to have such horrible things, you should have seen their behavior. You know, they would scoop them up, they'd be putting them in their pockets, and they'd get their purses, and they'd open it up, and, you know, the whole thing would be empty. I'd say, well, what are you doing? Well, you mean you could just have these whenever you want them? I said, well, I don't really have any rules about that. It's just, it's not something that we encourage or discourage. It's just there. It's like Emerson had a wonderful line. He said, foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little mind. A foolish consistency, a rigid consistency. So that there are many people who say, if I say it on Monday, you can be absolutely certain that on Wednesday, I'm going to believe the same thing, regardless of what might happen on Tuesday. Now, Tuesday might have something real that you might want to be changed in mind. You might want to say, you know, I thought that this time, but now I've seen this, and now we can shift. And you can see how this can become when, and so much about the Tao is on leadership, leadership in the family, leadership in the community, leadership geopolitically, less rigidity, more openness, more willingness to listen and say, I changed my mind. Because a foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. And what I believed on Wednesday has changed because of what happened on Tuesday. Now, another important thing to say to your children, to your friends, to your lover, to your spouses, to whomever, to the people you work with, words that we're so terrified to say, but which give us a sense of living with the Tao. I don't know. I don't know. I'll look it up. Say it.
I don't know. Doesn't hurt. Say it again. I don't know. Isn't it fearful? I mean, so many things. And it's like very freeing because my kids call, ask me something, and I say, I don't know. They say, Dad, you know everything. You know everything. I say, well, I don't know that. And I'll look it up, or we'll try to find an answer to that. But I don't quite know. I know that I spent 20 years running, and I ran every day for 20 years, 22 years, without missing a day, 8 miles, never missed a day. That's rigid. Don't call that unacceptable. But you brush your teeth every day, I used to say, and you don't call that obsessive. You go to the bathroom every day, and you don't say, well, he's obsessively doing that again today. You don't do that. But anyway, what I learned is that even in the world of exercise, there are certain things that are built in to make us rigid, to make us stiff, to make us hard. And we lift, and we run, and we kick, and this is what we call working out. There's another kind of working out that is ancient. It goes back to the time of Lao Tzu and before, which is called yoga. And yoga means union. It means union with your source. And when you do yoga, you can stay in the same place. You can do the equivalent of 8 miles. When I used to run 8 miles, I had to run 4 miles that way, turn around, 4 miles back, and I'd be sweating. Now I can do yoga, and I can just stand in one place, and in 90 minutes, by being supple, by making myself stretch, by not being hard and rigid, I can get that out there, I can get that leg up, I can do these kinds of things, and 90 minutes later, you know, it's like I'm totally sweating, and I feel so different. I used to, when I would go out at night to eat or something, after running so many miles, running marathons and doing those things, I'd go to get up, and it would be, okay, it's going to take a little while, because everything was done. That doesn't happen anymore because I've given up hard. I've given up being rigid. I've given up being
with all that it needs. It does not hurry, yet it completes everything on time. One of my favorite lines from the Tao, one of my favorite beliefs from the Tao is this, that you're doing nothing. All of you, you're doing nothing. You're just being done. Just like you were the first 9 months of your life, you think you're out there and you're making this happen and you're making that happen and you've got all these rigid things and you have to apply your life this way. You're not doing anything any more than you were having your fingernails show up when they were supposed to. And look at you. Look at all of you. Look around. You know, it's like, you know, what held it in yesterday? I don't know. I'm not doing anything. They fall out, and they don't fall out no matter how hard I tried to keep them in there. Finally, my kid said, give it up. Give it up. So I was over in England, and they told me that I couldn't take my shampoo bottle on the plane, and there's nothing you can do about it. I said, yes, there is. I'll just shave my head. I no longer need shampoo. Okay, so we want to move from stiffness to flexibility. The next thought that I'd like to see us change that the Tao taught me so much was living by interfering to shift that to living by not interfering. Do you know that every one of your children have the anchor of the universe located within them? And that Khalil Gibran, this is a paraphrase, he said, your children are not your children. They are the products of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not for you. They're not there for you. So what are you doing interfering in their lives? Now, I'm not talking about letting them play out in the traffic or play at the edge of a swimming pool if they don't know how to swim. I'm talking about that. I'm talking about, I called this when I was working on this and living this and practicing this for that full year of 2006, the bite your tongue, zip your lip verses of the Tao, verse 29 of the Tao. Do you think you can take over the universe and improve it? I do not believe it can be done. Everything under heaven is a sacred vessel and cannot be controlled. Trying to control leads to ruin. Trying to grasp, we lose. Allow your life to unfold naturally. Allow other people's lives to unfold naturally as well. We have parents, I see them a lot. They're called helicopter parents. Because they're always hovering. They're hovering over their kids, and they're telling them what to do and what not to do. And my son came over from England, my son Shane, and he was going to get ready to go to college in America. And my wife said to me, so you're going to take him and show him about registration, right? I said, oh, yeah, I'll be doing that. She said, well, make sure that you help him because he doesn't have any idea how to register at the school, this great big school with thousands of people. I said, yeah, and I do. Right? I would know how to register kids at school, you know? And so Shane got in the car, and I said, it's all going to be fine. You'll all be fine. And we drive over to the campus, and I drop him off, and I have my tennis racket in the back. And he said, where are you going? I said, well, I'm a prophet. I said, I get paid by the thought. And I have a tennis mat, and then I have to walk on the beach so that I could pay by the time. He said, but what about the registration? I said, well, the registration, I said, you'll do a lot like I did when I learned to register. He said, well, what do you mean? I said, you'll just go up to the people and say, where is registration? And they'll say, it's over there where all those people are all lined up. Because I remember those days in a college of 40,000 students or so finding out how to register. Tracy, did I take you to register, honey? No. So he said, you mean you're just going? I said, yeah, you just go over there. I said, you want daddy to walk with you over and take you to graduate? You're 18 years old and you want daddy to register you? He said, oh, no, I wouldn't want that. So we got home at the end of the evening, when I got back home, and my wife had said to me, she said, did you help Shane at registration? Oh, I said, I gave him so much help, probably the most help he ever had in his life. I taught him how to do things for himself, and so that I wouldn't have to be interfering and hovering over and figuring it all out for them. My children know that when their science project comes up, that I'm there for consultation. But I passed science. I got through that myself. And you'll be doing your own science project. If I can help you, I'd be happy to help you. But I'm not going to be getting the glue and figuring out how to make a time clock and all of that. I said, you know, just look at a clock. That's how you tell time for me, whatever it might be. And it's not an uncaring, and it's not a callous attitude at all. It's an awareness that your children have the anchor of the universe located within them. That's what Lao Tzu said. Now, my dear friend, who I love so much, she's right here in the audience, Carrie, right there, Carrie Evans from Molly. She has two beautiful little daughters, and she asked me if I would watch them one afternoon when my grandson, Carter, was visiting. I said, I'd be happy to watch them. She said, but you don't understand. I mean, they're gonna do this, and they're going to do that. I said, you just go off, and she was studying for an exam. I said, you go study, do whatever you have to do. I can handle three little kids out at the swimming pool for 3 or 4 hours. I can handle that.
So she went off, very nervous, gave me lists, told me what to do, what they might say, what they might not say. And then if she says, now, if Kylie says this, you tell Kylie, and if Kamiley says this, Kylie, Kamiley, and Carter, all right? So they go out there, and right here, there's a little pool over here, a little swimming pool. And I watch them over in the swimming pool, and Kylie takes the water and splashes my grandson, Carter, and splashes Kamiley, and Kamiley comes over to me and runs over within 2 minutes. Says, Kylie splashed me. Well, of course, I'm working on the dock. Not interference. And I said, splashing, honey, is in the way of things. When you're near water, splashing will take place. She said, yeah, but she splashed me. I said, you'll probably work this out. This will all be fine. She stood there for the longest time with her little lips and so on, and finally she realized she wasn't getting anywhere with me. She went back. Before you know it, one of them had taken, now Kylie and Kamiley are teaming up against Carter. And they pushed him under or whatever. Now one of them is 5 and one of them is 4 and one of them is 7 or 8. And Carter comes running over as fast as he can, runs over. He calls me Bompa. From Grandpa, Bompa. Bompa, Bompa, Miley pushed me under the water. I said, Carter, I'm a Taoist master. But Bompa, she put me under the water. I said, you'll just have to work this one out, Carter. I'm a Taoist master. This went on all for the first hour or so. But I noticed as I was less interfering and less interfering that they were working it out. They tried again after a few times. They'd come over and they wanted this and they wanted one to push and one of that. But each time when I let them know that I was watching and making sure they were safe, but I wasn't going to interfere. I wasn't going to resolve it. I wasn't going to settle their disputes for them. I wasn't going to be a helicopter parent, even for an afternoon. And the way that it resolved itself was they have the anchor of the universe within them. They have a nature. They know what to do. One of my favorite things always to say to my children when there's a conflict is, you know what the right thing to do is. What do you think? You know. You have it in your heart. You are a divine being. They all know that. I've said those words to them over and over again. You'll figure it out. You'll work it out. Not I'm going to interfere. I'm going to tell them what to do. You can practice this so many places, so many ways in your life, particularly as parents, even in business. It's very important in businesses to allow the people to say at the end of the day, right out of the Tao, oh, we did that ourselves. We did it ourselves. In the Tao, it says, there's a time for everything, and everything in its time. There's a time for everything. Listen to this. There's a time for being ahead and a time for being at peace. There's a time for being in motion and a time for being at rest. There's a time for being vigorous and a time for being exhausted. And in the Bible, to everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under the sun. I practice. This was so helpful to me, particularly as I do my yoga practice. In my yoga practice, there are some very exhausting postures. I do this Bikram hot yoga, all right? So it's 105 or between 105 and 110 for 90 minutes. And there's one that I used to hate. It's called triangle, you know? And so you put your foot out here and then you do this and then you get yourself up and you go all the way down and you get yourself in balance like this. So you balance, and you take your arms out here and then you take these like this. And it's 105 degrees, and then you take one, and you're looking up here at your arm, you look, and then you bring it back, and it lasts a full minute. And I used to just wait for that minute to be over. Oh, my God. When are they going to bring me in this posture? It was so exhausting. I started practicing what the Tao teaches, and I remembered there's a time for being exhausted. There's a time for that. And as I practiced that, I said, and there's a time for being at rest. And it's coming, hopefully soon. But in your life, there's an awareness that there is a time for all the things that go on that you think shouldn't be happening. In the Tao, it says that hidden in all misfortune is good fortune. Hidden in the misfortune that you have is good fortune, because no storm
can last forever. Even nature cannot create a storm that lasts forever. Ultimately, hidden within every storm is calmness. Hidden within every flood is drought and dryness. Hidden within all of the storms of your life is the peace that you desire. And it leans on you if you stop telling yourself and just let yourself go with it, to be in harmony with it, rather than trying. You can see why this is called the wisest book ever written, and we're just touching on it here, just touching on it. Lao Tzu was green before Al Gore. He was. This is verse 39 of the Tao Te Ching. When man interferes with the Tao, the sky becomes filthy, the earth becomes depleted, the equilibrium crumbles, creatures become extinct, therefore nobility is rooted in humility. Finally, I'd like to say to you, in understanding this idea of the Tao, is to take time yourself for being in nature. Take an hour a day, every day of your life, take an hour a day, no matter how busy you are, no matter what scheduling that you have, to get out in nature. Walk barefoot on the grass. Walk there. It's one of the great ways to overcome an inability to sleep at night. Just go out when you can't sleep and just walk on the grass, walk on the earth, and reconnect yourself. Now, go out and be with the tree and look at what you can learn from nature. Look at these trees. Look at these animals. You can study. You can study a flower like that that is so magnificent as it's unfolding. That's an actual photograph of this thing growing and unfolding there. You know, be with that. You have much to learn from nature, from water, from the sky, from the wind, from the trees, from the birds. The more you do it, the more you see yourself in all of them, the more you'll feel yourself as a connected being, living the Tao. Another thought to change. To change from thinking big to thinking small. It's so much of the Tao has in it statements that seem so paradoxical and so confusing to us. More is less. Less is more. Think small and get great things done. Accomplish great things. Listen to verse 64 of the Tao Te Ching. A tree that fills a man's embrace grows from a seedling. A tower 9 stories high starts with 1 brick. And here's the most famous line out of the Tao. A journey of 1,000 miles begins with what?
First step.
One first step. Okay. So today I can stand up here on this stage in this beautiful sacred place, in this beautiful yin-yang symbol, on this incredibly beautiful set that feels so much like nature. And I can say to you that in a very short time, this year, I will have completed 20 years without taking a drink of alcohol. 20 years. Okay. Thank you. That's big. That's big. Because I drank every day. Not to get drunk, but I drank every day. 2-3 beers every evening after running, and it was like I couldn't remember a day. I thought years, well, I couldn't think of a day, not one day in the previous decade or two that I had not had a beer or several beers. So that's big. And if I would have tried, if I'd have said to myself 20 years ago, Wayne, you're going to quit drinking for the next 20 years, I would have gone immediately and had a drink. Because it's just too big. Isn't it? It's just too big. You don't do big things. You do small things and thus accomplish great things. It's a very important distinction to make. Whatever it is that you would like to create or contribute or become in your life, take one step. How did I let drinking go for 20 years? And I don't even know about tomorrow.
I never think about tomorrow and whether I'm going to have a drink. All I know for sure is that this won't be the day. I do it one day at a time. That's how you overcome anything called an addiction in your life. You take it, you reconnect yourself to the source from which you came, which is a source of what? Well-being, isn't it? And you get back and return, get on the return trip and say, I am connected to well-being. And I'll do this one day, 1 hour, 1 minute, 1 second, if I have to, at a time. And when you do it, I mean, it's behind in all of the programs for overcoming addictions, all of the work of Bill W., all of the work of Alcoholics Anonymous, all of the work of any kind of addictions. It isn't just alcohol. It can be food. It can be addiction to your email. It can be addiction to work. It can be addiction to so many things that so many people find that they can't get past and to move themselves into a place where I think small. I ran 7 marathons in my running years. And about the 22nd or 23rd mile, you begin to ask yourself about your sanity. What am I doing here? And my body is breaking down. But the way that you finish the marathon is not by saying, I'm going to run 26 miles. You don't do that, especially when you still got 5 or 6 to go. You just say to yourself, can I put my foot in front of the next one? Can I take one step at a time? Can I do it one step at a time? And before you know it, you've accomplished great things. I watched my wife give birth to 4 children in right there in her in the delivery room with her. And she does not, you know, when you have a baby, it takes 9 months, doesn't it? You don't say to yourself, oh my God, I gotta have a baby, I gotta get pregnant, I gotta deliver, I gotta go through labor, because that is just like, so there are people who do that, and it's a torture for them. But I watched her do it one moment at a time in labor. Not what's going to happen an hour from now, what's going to happen this afternoon, am I going to have to have this? None of that. And she did it all naturally because it was always, and her mind was so strong as she was doing it that I couldn't even penetrate it. I couldn't even communicate with her. She was so focused on just being here. She would say, these are not labor pains. These are just signals. Just signal. And I can take this signal. I can do this for 1 minute. I can do this. It's the way everything gets done. I watch the great tennis players on the planet, Roger Federer, Pete Sampras, these people that are really masters at this game that I've played for so many years, not even close to this kind of level. And they'll be in a tournament, they'll have a seeding, and they'll say, here's the first round, here's the second round, here's the third round. There's no such thing as playing the fourth round before you've played the first round. And then when you get to the first round, you don't go out there and say, well, I've got to beat this person in 3 sets. You say, I'm going to take one serve at a time. I'm going to take one point at a time. And every great athlete, I don't care who they are, they will always say, I can't think out there in big ways. I can only think small. Thinking small is what gets great things done. Verse 63. Achieve greatness in little things. Take on difficulties while they are still easy. Do great things while they are still small. The sage, one of my daughter's names, the sage, does not attempt anything very big and thus achieves greatness. Greatness comes from being in the moment, here, present, in the now. The sage confronts difficulties but never experiences them. This is the idea of thinking small. And finally, I'd like to see you change from this thought. Change from seeing yourself as separate to seeing yourself as connected to everyone and everything in the universe. Our ego tells us that we are separate, that who we are is this body that we have, and everybody out there is separate from me. Nothing has been more profound and more powerful and important for me than this verse of the Tao Te Ching. This idea that we are all one. That all of us emanated from the same source. And by doing so, by emanating from the same source. We need to see ourselves as connected to every single being, every single person, every single flower, every single tree, every single animal. If you can see yourself in everyone, we're all connected. It makes about as much sense to me to have a smoking section in a restaurant as it does to have a peeing section in a swimming pool, right? Oh, no, 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 kids. No, 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 no. Don't pee over here. We pee over here. Does that make any sense? The Native Americans, one of my favorite quotes, I've used it many, many times. The Native Americans would say, no tree has branches so foolish as to fight among themselves. No tree has branches so foolish as to fight among themselves. We are all branches on a tree called humanity. When you read the Tao, when you read this idea about changing these thoughts and changing your life, you're going to see endless verses that speak to the absurdity of the idea of you having an enemy. The idea that you and anyone else on this planet is an enemy. In the Tao, it says, I and enemy cannot exist in the same sentence. And he said, even those who go to war, the ones who will triumph in war are those who go to war without an enemy. And they will treat every victory in war not as something to celebrate, but as a funeral, as an indication that we haven't reached the highest place within ourselves to see that even those people that we judge to be our enemy are really connected to us. And it says in the Tao that a bad man is a good man's job. And a good man is a bad man's teacher. A good man is a bad man's teacher. So finding that and seeing that, listen to verse 10, carrying body and soul and embracing the one, can you avoid separation? One who heeds this power brings the Tao to this very earth. This is the primal virtue. This was so helpful to me as I thought about it. Remember, I spent 4.5 days on each one of these verses. And in those, each one of those 4.5 days, I wasn't writing. I wrote the last 4 or 5 hours of those 4.5 days. For 4.5 days, I took that verse and I went out into the world and I looked at everyone that I encountered, everyone that I saw, and I tried to see myself in them. The person that was, you know, dressed differently than I would dress, the person who was not as attractive, the person who was very old, the person who was very young, the person who used language particularly that was possibly offensive, when I would look out there, would try, because the only difference between a flower and a weed is a judgment. It's just a judgment. It's just a judgment. And if we want to end violence in our lives and in our society, we have to learn to change our thoughts. Remember the dandelions when I was growing up in Michigan? We had these dandelions. The dandelion would have a certain time of year, they'd get all these little puff balls at the bottom. And then they'd have these little puff balls. If you the on your lawn, and you get a other little fuzzball, and you take a shovel, and you turn it upside down, and you start smashing all of the dandelions like this. And what do? When you use violence to attempt to end the presence of these dandelions, which are a problem for you on your lawn, is they all scatter, and then in the spring, guess what you got? You got more. You got new generations of dandelions. There's such a lesson in that, isn't there?
there's a great lesson that when we use violence as a means to resolve our disputes, whether it's individually with each other or whether it's in countries or whether it's in communities, whenever it is that we resort to that kind of not seeing myself in others, and out of this kind of a consciousness will emerge those people who will ultimately begin to get this. Because if we don't get it, if we don't get it, like if we don't really get it, civilization as we know it will not survive. It will not survive. We have to learn that the people that we call enemies, no matter how horrendous they may behave toward us, there is still something of us in all of them. And we can figure out a way. Yes, we, of course, have to defend ourselves. And yes, we don't allow people to push us, all of those kinds of things. But at a deeper and a higher level, Lao Tzu was asking us to go within and find that place of peace and try to reach out to that and help someone to make a U-turn. Those people can be reached because they have the anchor of the universe located within them. In verse 25 of the Tao, it says, thus to know humanity, understand earth. To know earth, understand heaven, which is where earth came from. To know the way, understand the great within yourself. Within yourself. Look within and see it. Now, every single person watching this program will have conflicts with somebody in their life on a fairly regular basis, especially if you're in a marriage or in a partnership of some kind. Certainly if you have children, you're going to have conflicts. Now think about what you do when you have a conflict and that conflict comes to an end. The conflict is over. You've expressed your opinion. You may have yelled at each other. You may have screamed at each other. You may not have understood each other. But it's over now. How do you end the conflict? Lao Tzu says, the person of Tao will eliminate all of the pain, all of the stress, all of the anger, all of the hatred if they decide to end the conflict with love. Just be the one who ends the silence by saying, we don't agree, but I love you. And it's all you have moved a person from staying in the world of the 10,000 things into the world of God, into the world of Source, because the Source has no violence in it. It creates endless numbers of flowers and beings and creations without using any force at all. There's no force there. Here's one of my teachers who lived in Bombay, which is now Mumbai in India. His name was Nisargadatta Maharaj. He said, wisdom is knowing I am nothing. Love is knowing I am everything. And in between the two, my life moves. In between the two. The ability to take a conflict, end it with love, is one of the most powerful things that you can do. It has been a great lesson for me. When we have a conflict, what we do is I will be the person that will pick up that phone. You can be certain of it. I will end that conflict with love. And guess what that does to the conflict? It's over. You can't pick a fight with someone who just doesn't want to fight anymore, who just sends you love. So I want to summarize some of these thoughts, and there are so many. Change your thoughts based upon the wisdom of the Tao, and your life will change. There's many principles to live by in the Tao. First, remind yourself that there is no way to happiness. Happiness is the way. Bring happiness to all that you do. You accomplish much by trying less. It's so inconsistent, isn't it, with what we live in the Western world. But the less you try, when I go out and swim in the ocean, and I do it almost every day, I try to do between 30 and minutes and an hour every day, being out there in that ocean. And I just get out there, and if I try less,
My arms just seem to know what to do, and the breathing just all works, and it's all, and I can swim all day. As soon as I try, as soon as I struggle, as soon as I try, the minute that I move myself into trying, it's like if I were to take this little cap here and drop it right there and say, I'm going to try to pick this up. I'm going to try to pick this up. This is what Lao Tzu was speaking about. So all of this, I'm really trying. All of this is called, in reality, not picking it up. That's what that's called, not picking it up. But when I just get easy and do less, see yourself, the Tao says, in everyone you encounter, a great lesson. Every single being, especially the ones that we read about who were told are our enemies, see yourself in them. Know that whoever they are, wherever they live, they want what we want. They want what I want. They want to be at peace. They don't want to be always struggling. They don't want to be sick. They just want to be loved, whoever they are. I know the skepticism of that. It's like, yes, but, all of the yes, but. But if they got it too, see, Lao Tzu wasn't speaking to, well, some are going to get this and some probably won't. Speaking to all of us. Trust in others, the Tao says, to know what's best for themselves. Trust in that. Trust in the pliability, the flexibility of your babies. Yeah, those little babies, they're so great when they're like, you know, 2 weeks old. You can take their foot, put it behind their neck, flip it around, you know, like this, put it in their mouth. They're so flexible. You can do anything. You pick them up, you turn them upside down. You watch them when they're starting to learn to walk. And they run, crash, they go down into the walls and all of this. You think, oh, my God, this kid will never walk again. Up they go, and they don't. Trust in their flexibility. Live without attachment and be generous. Be strong by bending. We need to learn this in our lives. We need to learn this in the world. It's not so important to be right. It's so much more important when you have a choice to be right or to be kind. Always pick kind. Always. Practice radical humility. Live low. Live low like those. Stay low. And all the streams will come to it. That's why it's so powerful, because it doesn't lord anything over anyone. And rather than looking for miracles, see everything as miraculous. Everything. There was a man who had a Tao experience, what I call a quantum moment. His name was John Newton. He lived back at the beginning of the 18th century, and he was crossing the ocean. He was a slave trader. He had a ship full of human cargo, and he was going to trade into slavery, the most hideous practice that was so common at that time in our history. And in the middle of a storm, on his way over there, all of these people, he was 22 years old, 23 years old, and he thought he was going to die. He thought the whole, like, must have hit a hurricane or something out there that was before satellites could warn people. And while he thought he was in that state of dying, he took out a pencil and a paper. And he wrote, I once was lost. And now I'm found. And it was grace. It was grace that taught my heart to feel. It was grace that brought me home. And when the storm was over, he had a moment. He reconnected to his source. Anybody out there can reconnect to the source, to the Tao, and become a being of Tao. But remember, it's a return trip. And you can make that return trip while you're alive. Remember the parents. He knows much more than we did. And he returned back to Africa, and he released the slaves, it is said. And for the next 55 years of his life, he shifted and became the most ardent spokesman as an abolitionist to abolish that hideous practice of slavery. That's what he devoted his life to it. A former slave, it's like going from Saul to Paul, you know, from being a person who crucifies and murders Christians to being the author of a big portion of the New Testament, as St. Paul. In a moment, it's possible for any of us. So, beautiful presentation on the Tao, Cecilia, with a poem that was written by a woman. Her name is Naomi Long Magid.
from Detroit, went to Wayne State University. She was named the Poet Laureate of Detroit, an acclaimed African-American poet. Listen to these words. It sums up all that I've been saying. I wouldn't coax the plant if I were you. Such watchful nurturing may do it harm. Let the soil rest from so much digging and wait until it's dry before you water it. The leaf's inclined to find its own direction. Give it a chance to seek the sunlight for itself. Much growth is stunted by too careful prodding, too eager tenderness. The things we love, we have to learn to leave alone. Thank you.
I'm just a normal boy that sank when I fell overboard. My ship would leave the country, but I'd rather swim ashore. Without a life that I'd be stuck against, wish I was much more masculine. Maybe then I could learn to swim like 18 miles away. Now floating up and down, I spin colliding into sound. Like whales beneath me diving down, I'm sinking to the bottom of my everything that freaks me out. The lighthouse gleam has just run out, I'm cold as cold can be.
Just your face. Enhance your mind. Recharge your spirit. Awaken your soul. Enhancing Awareness Radio. Enhancing awareness with clarity.
All right. Royalty to everybody. Thank you guys for tuning in to another podcast of Enhancing Enhancing Awareness Radio. I'm your host, Haru, guys. As you guys always know, Eternal is with me as well, guys. So today I wanted to do a classic throwback, you know what I'm saying? Change your thoughts, change your life. You know, as stated in the opening, years ago, you know, when I was doing a lot of shadow work and, you know, healing and working on myself before I started any business and before I even stepped into the arena publicly for spirituality, guys, I spent like about a good 5 years doing just self-work alone, you know what I'm saying? And this was one of the lectures that helped me, you know, change your thoughts, change your life, you know. And I thought early on, I thought, okay, what if I'm able to shift my perception? What if I'm able to just stop, you know, my thinking? Because, guys, listen, I would be driving in my car. You know how you're driving in a car and you're having that personal conversation with yourself? Have you just ever examined your thoughts? And it's like the conversation you were having internally, driving like with the radio off. How toxic is that conversation, y'all? Okay? So if you're honest with yourself, guys, you're like, okay, wait a minute. There's probably some things that I need to evaluate, you know what I'm saying, about the way that I'm thinking, about the way that I'm perceiving life. So if we set out to, you know, change your thoughts, change your life, you know what I'm saying? Once you start to shift those thoughts, you know, your perception of life starts to change, guys. I'm gonna post a clip in the show notes for you guys later so you can reference it. Well, I'm gonna do it after the show, but if you wanna go back, I think that you guys should go back in the classroom of your own personal life and see, you know, what, just write it down, like get a journal or something and just see the thoughts, like, okay, just take a thought, you know. With me, it was driving in traffic, okay? I said, you know what? I'm going to start to treat traffic like a healthy relationship, okay? So instead of getting mad because they got over on me or they wouldn't let me over, and, you know, this was like 4 o'clock in the traffic, dead center, on the outskirts of town, you know, right outside downtown and the mixed master of everything. And I thought, okay, if I could treat traffic like a healthy relationship, maybe that will assist me in shifting my thought, you know, with anything. You know, I applied that then to everything that wasn't serving me in my life, you know, change your life. That's what we're talking about today, guys. We're not going to be too much longer here. Eternal is here, but definitely, you know, eternal peace on to you, Royal Day. I would definitely, you know, a little light lecture today, but you know, do you believe or do you know or what are your thoughts on changing your thoughts, changing your life? How important is that for us to shift perspective? Peace and royalty onto you.
Peace, brother. How you feeling?
Okay. I feel, I don't know how I feel today, you know, actually. I don't know how I feel today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't.
It's just being the mist, huh?
Yeah, I'm kind of in a space of transition where I just don't know. You know, I posted today, admit that you don't know. I'm in a space of I don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So a space of uncertainty, but in a good way, though. It's not a bad thing, but it's a good uncertainty, okay? So
that's
what I'm at.
Yeah, I guess you can call it the neutral zone then.
Yeah, neutral.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Today is one of those days, like you said, highlighted. How do you want better? Want to focus on what makes you better at it, you know? And especially, I'm glad you did do the excerpt with the Tao and how Tao is the way of many ways. So as far as enlightenment, if you're able to tap into your enlightenment, that's like your best light from even darkness. So most dark things that we end up running into end up being our light that keeps us, you know, grounded. From what the brother said, he was like, goodness has to recognize bad, and badness has to be taught about what's good. You know what I mean? So even bad isn't as bad as one would think. Bad happens to be a perception. Just like when someone says, oh, what you did was wrong. It's not wrong that you did it. It was more left that you did it than they would have. So now it takes three lefts to equal that one right. You might have to look in your past that someone told you about something and you didn't want to go by it. But since you didn't want to go by it, it gives now a present to your past. And then someone in the near future, they probably end up telling you. And you're like, oh, shoot. And now that's now your past in the present, which now gives you a better outlook at your future. That's why future really isn't there. What we're craving for or anticipating end up happening is the result as a future. So it could be any possibilities when it comes down to future. That's why future happens to be a word that we won't see. Yet present is the idea of how to keep the focus on it to see it, you know. The carrot with the psychological, I mean, the psychological carrot in front of the horse. This is how the Constitution was created to make you feel that you have to pursue happiness. When in Taoism, happiness is within, so there's nothing to pursue unless you're just pursuing the excitement of the happiness. You know, you're already happy, but now it's just what makes you happier. You know, it makes you more in what we call the fulfillment of your happiness. Tao, just like Qi Gong Do. Qi Gong Do was taught by Bruce Lee. And Bruce Lee said, you know, when you first enter the dojo room, you have to enter the room just like how you enter your mind. And so how do you enter yourself is like to think of it being as an empty cup. So how to become an empty cup, right, so that when you do fill the cup up, whatever is put into the cup will be obtained. And that's like life lessons. We learn through life lessons. So there are certain things that in life, it takes a course, and it shows us what the courses are as you, you know, basically go through it. You're a course of yourself. So just become a track runner, but not just running all the time on the track. Find out what really attracts you versus distracts you, and then that being your track. You know, tracks also represents the railroad track. And then you also, as weaves, we get our hair as a track. So there's ways that we attract one another or distract one another by our attractions. So now it's a point of saying, just like how the brother said, don't get rid of weeds and the roses if you don't know the difference between the two. Because if not, they still give growth. So now, looking at how growth is between where you say, oh, this is a weed, or maybe it's not a weed. Can you really look at the beauty and the essence of it attracting you? And so much where it calls you a distraction. I had a brother who spoke to me earlier. He was like, there's this sister I saw. And in my mind, I'm like, man, she's beautiful. And then I said, I didn't ask him first of all. I just waited till he finished giving me a lot of the analogy. But then I said, "What are you drinking?" And he was like, "Yeah, I was drinking." I said, "Aha!" So the attraction was already set there before he even saw her. You can be really attracted by certain vibrations. So whether your vibration is low or your vibration is high, how astute are you when it comes down to the vibration changing? Where you still have that same attraction. So now that goes with how focused do you really focus, or do you don't focus? or don't have a mindset on focus. And then there's that time where you do have to say, okay, well, I'm going to have to start focusing because evidently I don't know what this is. like we call it twin flames, soulmate. You know, your soulmate should be more of the one that is like your uncle, your aunt, your friend, your cousin, anybody that was in your lifeline that comes back and still gives you a part of the soul you felt like was missing. And because of that, finding the unity in one, we look for twin flames to, you know, fulfill that same soulmate part. However, we might take a different outlook when we're looking at the seasons and the reasons how they change. You know, 3 months, 2 months, that first month you might have loved her, then the second month, I can't stand it, but then the third month, you're like, she came back to me. And you're like, how do I deal with that? And you're like, well, it's that new ambiance of what you should think about life. Like, do you unconditionally love or you just don't know how to love? And if you're working with that, it's the idea of, do you love yourself? Or maybe because you didn't love yourself, that's why you didn't know what unconditional love is. So you've been limiting yourself for love.
The twin flame relationship, you know, Eternal, listening to you reminded me of, you know, one that I was, you know, fortunate. I think we call it twin flame, but really it's like a mirror. You know what I'm saying? It's like a, it's a twin soul mirror, basically. And, you know, it's everything in what you were saying. You just kind of took me back with that. But, it was just that, you know, it makes you examine, you know, like, what is love? You know, what is your perceptions of love? And through all of that, you know what I'm saying? I know me and my flame, we love each other through everything, through every relationship, I don't think they got married, but, you know what I'm saying? It's like, and then they'll just come back to you, you know, it's like all of that, so. Yeah.
It's gonna teach you, right? It's gonna teach you how unconditional really is. Amongst even what they say, you can't have a hate for your enemy. You know, even the best in victory is not because they hated their enemy so much that's what they wanted to do was, you know, annihilate them. That's not a true essence to how we look at the unconditional love. The true essence of unconditional love would be that, and I know you've seen it. There's several times they might have put it in front of you and be like, before we fight, realize my power and your power is like the greatest going on right now. And the best we could do right now is basically formulate and put this power together. But then, of course, you hear the good guy or the bad guy be like, no, I don't want to, you know, formulate. You end up being a good guy, so-called. Saying, I don't want to formulate you evil, you're doing this, you're doing that, and then they begin to fight. So you really, when you're looking at the enemy on the TV screen, the propaganda is put for us to think, oh, he's the enemy because he did, you know, certain things that you wouldn't go by. So that's how we'll have like a split decision, but yet the split decision is in our imagination. So that's what makes it an altering factor, that it might not go the way you think it is. And the enemy might not be as, you know, as an enemy as you think it is. Because why would he offer you something before, you know, he goes in a battle? His whole battle was not to battle you. That's the whole idea. His battle was not to battle you. His battle is to get to your emotions and you know, create this other outcome from that, you know. And sometimes we do have to physically go in and be like, wow, man. I quit, you know, I won, you know, or, oh, man, I have so much power now, you know, because I knocked down or did whatever, and now that ended up losing. So there's like a win and lose in the thought. However, this winning and the losing, most people want to play games. So they play games initially because they say, I'm the best winner, or I don't like losing, so I'm going to do my best to win. So you got people who... one, competitive. Two, egotistical, to where they could overpower their own intentions of winning, that they'll demoralize their so-called sportsmanship to win. And so now when you see those things happen, here's the childish happening versus the childlike. Now, of course, we shouldn't be versing each other. However, this becomes a verse when you realize when some people play with the intent just to win. They don't care how they do it, as long as they win. When you look at someone who's like, you know, your best friend turn enemy because you played a game, now you got to put that in your perception of, okay, well, this is their realities on a lot of things. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, do they really love themselves, or this is how they love themselves only before they start passing love to other people? So that's the unconditional side to it. Would they play the game long enough to be like, would it be like this? All right, you play the game with somebody playing Monopoly. They had to leave. What would they do with their shares? Would they put it in the bank? Would they pass it to you so you could gain? Or would they pass it to everybody evenly? This is the same thing about the church. That's why the church is having so much difficulty now. When they pass that money around, that money's supposed to be passed up to the front, and it's supposed to be evenly distributed back out. They don't do that. Instead, they take that money and they send it to another source that's not in that church at all. So now we do feel a little bit some kind of slighted because we don't see that money coming back, and there's nothing we could do with that, even though we put out the energy to say, oh, Lord, you did a great service. I'm going to give it to you. Boom, boom, boom. But now you either a lord to it or you a slave to it, and there's the distraction and the attraction at the same time. Our unfolding is every Friday is good. Can't wait to get filled up Friday so you get the fish start, the spiritual, let's cook some fish on Friday. Now we're attracted by currency energy coming to us, but now fish is just like the same thing as your feet. You're cutting off your feet. So now as you cut off your feet, you're cooking it, eating two breads, eating that, and drinking, you know, and then Saturday, Saturn day, you all drunk it up or you want to go to the club. Now here we get in the club, hitting the head. But now you say, okay, well, I got to repent for all that I did over the week and the weekend. So now you go on the Sunday, you go on repent, go on let it out. Whew. And let me give you some dollars, too, so you can hush. That's the hush money. That's the hush puppy money. You know, a hush puppy, you know the reason why a hush puppy came into existence, right?
I do not.
This might be a this might be an off topic, but it's still on topic. They called it hush puppy, right? Because when this now, of course, this is the quotes that be throwing at us from the elder people. So I'm going to just say this came from an elder when I heard it. All right, so he was saying the reason why the hush puppies came into existence, we used to make cornbread, and cornbread would be so good that a dog would want to eat it. So when we left the so-called plantation and we run around, and then dogs are still coming after us, wanting to eat us and bite us and all that other stuff, we took some of that cornbread, and there was that hush puppy money. The hush puppy ended up being the food that we were giving to the dog or the puppy so they wouldn't, you know, keep going on our trail. It's just basically to throw the scent off from us.
Right.
And this is why even now, that distorted message ended up being a message for a lot of us where we get the bones and the biscuits. We're doing a lot of meritorious manumission for the bones and the biscuits. You're thinking you're going at the end of the day, you're going home to feed your family. But when you pulled your bag out and said, you know, mama, daddy brought home the bag, so now he dropped the bag out, and all you see is bones and biscuits. He's like, whoa, 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 where's the food at? Like, this is the projection that has happened since we were in our younger time frame when that bag used to be the gold and the riches of the fine earth. Now it's bones and biscuits. Biscuits, first of all, are off of people or animals, and then the biscuit is made through the earth just that it's the lowest now of the earth to offer is what you're getting. So now this is why a lot of us feel slighted. Younger do we get, the older our frustration gets, that you even see a baby don't smile. When you look at the pictures in the 1900s, what were you seeing? Early, the late 1800s, early 1900s, they weren't smiling. They took away the imaginational feeling. So now radio, computers, everything now got us so much into that we don't even have our imagination. So we will allow that to be our imagination than anything else. You know, the genie in the lamp, they say you had to rub it, and what would happen, you know? Like in the Latin?
Yeah.
Is it in the Latin? I dream the genie. When you rub it, the genie comes out. out of the lamp. Mm-hmm. Remember, the lamp also represents your light. Mm. So what else but a dark night, right? To be still light.
Mm.
This is why Batman was created, to be a dark night, a winged, dark winged nightman. So now the wing, like a wing represents on a bird, is the ba or the ma'at, your feather, your light as a feather. We're in the age of Aquarius, but we're learning a lot of not knowing like Batman is really ma'at, just in the dark time. So you got the dark time, the arch time, the dark man, in a caveman or a cave mentality, dark caveman, a winged dark cave, you know, all of these are the connection to the imagination. So basically what is going on here is symbols are being used, but as a sigil, you know, just like Jesus or Zeus. Zeus is Jesus, or Eshu is Jesus, or Yeshua is Jesus. So the imagination of, if you really want to focus on it, this is what you're getting out of your focus, you know. If you want the Kool-Aid version, you can have the Kool-Aid version, but this is as far as it's going to go. You know what I mean? If you go in the jungle gym with all the little toys and, you know, children playing in the jump house, and you like seventh grade, you ain't going to want to be in there. You be like, what am I doing here? Okay, I guess I got to watch the children, make sure they don't get hurt. So you're going to make the best out of every example you can. That's the best thing you can do right now. Make it the best out of every. If you see the worst of it, find the best of it. And if it ain't the best of it, just walk away and gave your best thoughts to it. Give it your best thoughts to it. Why not? It's not going to hurt you. You a godly being. They said, aren't ye God? And why did they tell Adam and Eve that you can make a decision as God would make a decision from good and the evil of, you know, of knowledge? Why would the apple be not just the apple, but knowledge? We're gaining our wisdom after you know what your knowledge is. And that's the knowledge yourself. You got to know that there's no ledge to yourself unless you pledged it to yourself. And once you pledge it to yourself, it's automatically on your, you just basically put a seal on yourself and saying to yourself, this is as far as I'm going to go. And it's up to you to figure out, do I want this bad enough to even go past the seal that I done put on myself to make it say, oh, I don't think I can do it. Like the brother said, do you say, oh, I'm going to run 23 miles? Or you going to say, let me take this one step at a time. And when I get to that 23rd, I'm going to just get there. If I don't, I won't.
Yeah.
But if I do, I'm doing it because I did this one step at a time, you know, and that's how a book should be read, you know. Read one page one page. Don't read the whole book.
You know,
you'll get finished.
It took me some practice to get there, like some stepping and some stumbling and some, you know, but in everything I'm learning now, one day at a time truly is a wise approach to make everything effective.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
What somebody has laid out for you to be successful, but what is success to you? You know what I'm saying? What do you define success? What does your internal soul define success as? And whatever that is for you, it's tailor-made for you. You know what I'm saying? There is no measurement. I'm learning that.
Right. Yeah, you're right. There is no measure. It's unlimited measurement. And if you know how you're treasuring more than the other, that's why we limit our treasures, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The word treasure also has you realize what treasure does for yourself. Measure enlightenment. If you're enlightened constantly, then you're living in it. But if you're not enlightened by anything, then you're also living in it. So it's just best to find out how can you enlighten yourself constantly, not just get stuck, because most people can get stuck. They'd be like, man, I was emotionally driven by this one thing, and I saw it on TV. And you're like, you saw it on TV? How old is it? I ain't even look. Go back and look. Then it'd be like, dang, that's about 4 years back. Yeah, people are propagating you to stay stuck in an emotion. Now, of course, emotion and feelings, those are two different bodies. So if you get stuck by your emotional body, when you're feeling something, you just put two bodies together, and now you're keeping that in your physical and your mental and your spiritual plane, that your etheric, that ether body, that is your sympathy body. And so that's why when you want to sympathize and empathize, that comes from that etheric side. And if that don't work right, it's because of your feelings and your emotions. And we have to work on the first basic 1, 2, 3. And now what we all know is mental, physical, and spiritual. Now, of course, this is going to be a help crash course right now. How many skin layers are on your body? Do you know?
I have no clue. No clue.
All right, the average tell us 3, right?
Yeah, they did tell us it was 3, from what I remember now, yeah.
Right.
3 layers of skin.
Epidermis.
I heard 7 somewhere.
Right. Okay, I hear you, bro. Yep. not just this subdermis, the epidermis, and the dermis. You actually have a 7 rainbow layer on you. And then not only does the 7 rainbow layer of your rays or your waves create a 9 rays and waves. Now, how does this work? First, you have to know about I Ching. I Ching is I-C-H-I-N-G, just like how Tao is. You find out there's many ways, right? And in these many ways, you have what we call the Ot wave. It comes right back to you. So what we basically know is air, fire, earth, air, and rain. Those are the first elements. But these elements have been splitted. So you can have 3 of the 4s in these sections. This is how now when it intersects is either 3+4 or 3x4. And that's how you get not only 9 waves, you got now 12 tones on you that are connected to your actual skin layers of yourself. See, they made the skin, right, took the K out, because remember, sky is the limit. But if you take the K out, you got sin is the limit. So now we've been limiting ourselves by sins, not sky. The sky doesn't have a limit. Sky is beyond the limit. So why we say sky is the limit, you know? So that's only saying you can only see as far as the sky that you can see. Versus if it was 10% sunlight at night, I mean during the day, is 90% darkness during when the sun is down. But that 10% of sunlight is still in 90% darkness. We just don't see it. So now when that 10% fade out, you feel completely blind or scared or all these other imaginations that really wasn't there. You just created that. And you honestly look at the sky, it's not black. It's not completely black. If it was, you wouldn't even see those stars up there. So how do you see the stars and you see the sky? And then if it's raining or about to rain, you see the sky look great. If you put your phone up and put it towards the sky at night, you might see it a different color. You're like, wait a minute, this sky ain't even the sky they said it's supposed to be. But this is what they call night.
Especially now with this plasma energy.
Yeah, okay, so now you know you're in plasma. That's a major way of finally figuring out all this is basically plasma. If you spray on right at night, it could be 1 a.m., somewhere around there, you're going to see a rainbow. As long as you're near a light and the rain, I mean, the water sprinkling out your hose or whatever you got to continually keep the water going, and there's grass, you're going to see a spectrum of a rainbow. Now, you got the sun out, and you do the same thing, you're going to see a rainbow. That's letting you know plasma been around you. You got an aura around you all the time. It's just how much did we not focus on it? So now we should start doing some focusing on, you know, your mama been here. Your mama taught you and mm-hmm, and no one else had to teach you that. The teacher didn't have to teach you that. Your father didn't. Your mama said at, that means at. Your dad didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
You knew at. No. And if you didn't, she'll show you how you're going to learn it. Might be a different way. Everybody got their ways of showing it. However, in this book, emotionally, you know, the emotional parent, we have to find out not to be the emotional immature parent. Because, see, when you get emotional and then when you act immature to your child, now your child has nothing else but to be more responsible than you to now teach you the lessons that you didn't teach them. And that's how we're learning. We're learning from Lala Africa's lecture in Harlem. If you look at that, Lala Africa's lecture in Harlem, he breaks it down on how the child is how you want it. You know, you wanted the child, right? You can't just, oh, let me just give me a child. No, there's steps to it, you know.
Can you send
say
it
again,
when you get a chance? Can you send that
yeah,
to
yeah,
me
I
please,
will.
When you get a chance? Okay.
I sure will. That in itself will show you that in a comedic spirit, we think differently than the RNA. We are DNA. That's why they use DNA to find out if you killed somebody. They ain't checking RNA. RNA means without thought. DNA means you thought this out. So now how do you think it out? Was it premeditated? Was you, you know, being mature about it? Were you being immature about it? And this, again, goes back to our immature emotional parent. You might be immaturely emotionally acting it out, and now you're so full of rage, you will cut somebody because they stepped on your shoe. Purpose? Not as big as you would think. However, the outcome would be a terrible outcome just because of that. The result behind it ends it off shorter than it could have been lived longer, you know? Certain things that we do when we breathe, we should be rather to let go of the breath than to hold on to it. You find out if you let go of the breath, you can breathe again. But if you hold on to it, that's your last breath. So just like with pride, you don't want to keep going to where you're going to destroy and self-destruct whatever's around you. They got to realize they're going to keep going, just like a liar. Once a liar starts lying, how long does the person lie? Are you just going to keep on lying? Like, you made up a story that didn't sound right. Your woman saw you do this lie, and yet you still want to stick to the lie. You think she going to trust you the next time she asks you a question? She saw you lie. She saw you in the act of it, but you just saying, no, that wasn't me. I ain't do no. And you're like, I just saw you. Now you want to say my eyes are lying to me? Yeah, well, I'm going to say your eyes are lying because I'm going to take this to the grave. And that's what some of our relationships, our mama, our father, our grandfather, our great, that's what they're doing. That's the curse. That's what they want to live off of. We don't got to live off of that. Tell the truth, how they say it. If you tell the truth, what are you going to do? What's it going to do?
Shame the devil.
Say it again. Shame the devil. They're going to shame what you were stuck in of the past. It's going to shame that. But now once it's shamed it, can you now be in the present? Or are you just going to be stuck in shame of your past? You know what I mean?
A lot of people are witnessing that eternal.
They got to outlive their past, bro. They can't just be stuck in it. That's like a teacher learning 30 years of teaching.
Let me tell you something. I watched somebody I love dearly close to me who, you know, lived a life of success, you know what I'm saying, for a good 30 years to get laid off from their 30-year job of success to revert right back to day three where they were at when they left off 30 years ago. Do you hear me?
Wow. Yeah. I mean,
literally went back to this. I'm still processing it, Eternal, because, I mean, you went back. Yeah. That is just an indicator to show you that you cannot run from your past. It will be right there to haunt you.
Yeah. If you can't balance it, it will balance you. That's the check and the balances that we be wanting to get cash from, you know, your income and your outcome. I ain't looking for all this money that most people be looking for. How much am I going to get paid for? When am I going to get paid? I'm ready to get paid right now. I want to get paid this week. I want to get paid every day. How about spiritually? Did you give out any spiritual dollars? Did you give out any spiritual before you thought physical or even mental? Did you do it? Did we lose the rites of passage when we ain't giving out none? You think Scrooge was about a story? No, all of us are Scrooges. You're a Scrooge to your mama, your daddy, the shelterless brother that was just on the street. All he did was put his hand out. And you said, oh, his past is haunting him right now. I'm going to just let him live it. Okay. Okay. Well, what if he see you again? I hope he don't see you again. Because if he see you again, he going to say, oh, your past now I'm caught up with you. I hope you relive it. Uh-oh. What are you going to do now? See, when someone smacks somebody on one side of the face, do you look to smack the other person because he smacked you? Or do you turn your cheek so you get smacked on the other side? And then when you smack the other person, did you smack them twice, three times? You just, I blanked out. Some people say that. I blanked out. As soon as somebody hit me, I blank out. They shouldn't have put their hands on me. I'm going to teach them a lesson. Oh, wait a minute. Wasn't you supposed to teach them the lesson? Sometimes the lesson's already given. We just don't see it. Now we want to be the best to give the lesson because we don't think it was the best way they could have got it. I don't know how that judgment started. It started, though. I mean, they said Hebrews did it with the Hebrews did it as Romans, and Romans did it as Jesus. And here's the deceiver. Yet at the same time, they all punished Jesus, and like, how is he the deceiver? Oh, that's right. Y'all won't listen to him in the first place until after he's dead and gone. After water done dried up, you say, oh, I want some more water from the well. Ain't no more water. You can't till the earth. How you expect the water to come out? They say you can't get water out of a rock. Actually, you can. All you got to do is heat it up a little bit. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, there's some realities that can be checked.
Didn't know that. All right.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this has been a great, great podcast, guys. Thank you, thank you, thank you for joining us on another podcast of Enhancing Awareness Radio. We definitely appreciate you guys so much for always tuning in. You know, change thoughts, change your life. You know, when is the last time you've done a self-evaluation of your own self-thoughts, you know? And doing that self-evaluation, you know, does those thoughts serve? So I posted the link in the YouTube link in the show notes, guys. So, guys, I encourage you to go back and really sit down with yourself and dissect this for yourself. Just another indicator, guys, the negatives, I'll do another podcast on negative self-programs, but the negative self-programs is really what this is. Those subconscious thoughts that are like on autopilot plays a huge part. Thank you. Okay, he did a lecture on this. Okay, I was wondering where that was. I don't know where I put it on my calendar, but I know that this is coming up, but I need that. But thank you. You gave me what I need. So thank you guys. Thank you. Definitely appreciate you guys. So that's all I got. Till next time, guys. Peace. We got a lot of great stuff, you know, coming up. You know what I mean? On Enhancing Awareness Radio, guys. Just what Eternal said about the children. You know, the children. I mean, the children, guys. I think it's very important to really think about our youth, think about the children, think about the connection that we have between our elders and our youth. And to enhance those relationships, guys. So that's all I got, guys. And please join us tomorrow for Spiritual Soul Sunday. I mean, excuse me, not tomorrow. Hell, we didn't do a show yesterday, so I'm thrown off. I'm sorry, y'all. Join us next weekend. The podcast that we missed yesterday was about elves, you know, about the elves. I think that the elves play kind of a role in a lot of things here on Earth. But, you know, those elves that we used to see for cartoons like the Smurfs, was those a real tribe? You know what I'm saying? Like, what are these cartoon figures and all of this stuff that they face? But we just think it's entertainment or just a cartoon. You know, are they really depicting actual civilizations that actually live that they don't talk about? It was more than Egypt. It was more than the Atlanteans. It was more than the Moors. It was more, you know what I'm saying? We have a many different number of civilizations that are not talked about, you know what I'm saying? So I feel that those are coming to the surface as well, whether we like it or not. But we're going to talk about the elves, all right? So join us next week, 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central for that. All righty, Tony, you can go ahead and take us out.
We're on a pavement that the pave is P with A's as an av. So the average might not know what they meant. Yet mint is also mean if you didn't know how to M-I-N-T meant it. So with this min, M-I-N, is a deity of your energy, the highest part of the navel in nativity. We will call these our people of navigation, the Navis. And change the Navi, of course, in navigation. You hear how did these words also interacted with our average of being, not just a street, not just a straight, because these streets and straights are a point where how the water also been changed to a narrow road. That's our road now being reflection. You and all of us are reflections of light. So as the pixels give us what we call it neutrinos, telomeres are giving us now the DNA light codes that come from the smallest of a subatomic energy that we call atom. Now, of course, atom being atum, how do you atone yourself? You have to know what mother is. Mother is atom. So know that your atom is the same thing as your Eve in the evening. Before you become a star, and of course, before you get on the stage, take the T out, and know your age is sage. It's just been ages with an S on the back of age. So constantly, if you can't see the contagion cause to your cause, your ka being in a cage, then your casual thoughts also become your attire and how you wear it to a point that now you retire or you feel like you're tired. But even with a tire, you add it on a D to get a tired. So now what is it do you address yourself? Don't just be a skirt and don't just skirt past it. Learn how not even a squimmer's thing should stop you from how you're the immovable, unpenetrable triangulation of self, tribunal as the navigation Navi, as your national being of self, to even internationally known how you move. You're a traveler, so travel. Travel like this astral is in the world until you finally see your atmosphere, not just atmosphere things, but the atmospheric of thought. Ashe? Ashe, ooh, good things, Ashe.
If I gave you my love, tell you what I do, I expect a whole lot of love out of you, huh? You got to be good to me. I'm gonna be good to you.
when you're needing me, I will right there. Said you girl, yeah, got a kiss, baby. I could say about you, girl. I could say that I